tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go. Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Mary Scott. Mary had careers as a bilingual teacher and paralegal before deciding animal welfare was her true calling. In 2009, she started work as a veterinary receptionist, pet sitter, and volunteering at the ASAP Cat Shelter in Santa Barbara, California. In 2017, Mary became director of ASAP's Working Cats program, which she still runs as an ASAP volunteer. Mary lives in Santa Barbara with her husband and rescue cat, Felix. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So, such a pleasure to be here, Stacey. Just love it. Thank you so much.
I know. I'm so excited to have you here today. I can't wait till we really get into the heart of this conversation. But before we jump in, first off, our first question is always, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats?
Well, it's so interesting. I came from a household in Palos Verdes, California, and I always, of course, so many people can say I grew up with cats. But beyond that, my parents were into spay-neuter back in the 60s and 70s when it wasn't necessarily the coolest thing or the most renowned thing. And we had cats and dogs all the time when I was growing up. They were taken great care of. We would keep a cat until if it had cancer and that leg had to go, the leg would be amputated. I have such memories of that. And I think really the environment does shape the person. And I really give a lot of credit to my parents for bringing me up as an animal advocate, animal lover, really. Lover of all animals. And then cats became my specialty as I started volunteering for ASAP in 2009. So it's been 15 years in animal sheltering. And to tell you the truth, just it's been ups and downs, as it can be heartbreaking, it can be exhilarating, and riding out all those waves, I just have never looked back and just am so really proud of not only the work I do, but the work that the cat shelter does, that ASAP does for cats in Santa Barbara County.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was funny. So my mother adopted a kitten from the neighborhood back in 1961, and she was told that it was a boy. And so she named the kitten Duncan, and she brought Duncan in to get spayed in 1961, got her spayed, but she became a she.
Yeah. I know.
And so Duncan lived to be 20 years old. I wasn't born until Duncan, I was later in 68. So Duncan was about 7 or 8 years old by that point in time. So she was old and grumpy for me when I was a toddler. She taught me a lot about respecting personal space and treating your elders with care and respect and all of that kind of stuff. And she was a wonderful cat. And I didn't think anything of it. So here's my mother who, you know, in 1961, just obviously feels like you need to get your cat fixed. You know, it was an obvious thing. And I didn't know back then, or it took quite a while to know that cat litter wasn't even invented until like 1955.
Wow.
So this was probably cutting edge thought of, oh, I'm going to get my cat fixed. So that the so the cat's not going to have kittens. And just very thankful with regards to that and the fact that then I got also introduced to early age spay-neuter with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. When I joined them in 1994, they were spaying and neutering any kittens that were 2 pounds. And before adoption, which was considered quite rare, but for me, it was just, well, everybody gets their cats fixed.
It's such a clear indication of how cultural these kinds of things can be. And when we look at Santa Barbara County and we see how culture can play into how cats are handled from how cats and kittens are handled in terms of spay-neuter and how education is so important for all stratifications of our society. I can't make a blanket statement that certain cultures are going to be pro-spay-neuter or not, of course, but getting the word out there can really be so important on just the importance of spay-neuter and making that just even more prevalent than it already is in whatever area we're in.
So today we're going to really focus on almost having like a working session around developing a barn cat program. Why do you, as an organization, need to have a barn cat, or specifically a barn cat relocation program? And what is that in your knowledge?
Yeah, so the ASAP Working Cats program was established by a volunteer. It was one of the earliest programs at ASAP. It was established about 20 years ago. And what we had were non-social cats or feral cats, even semi-social cats who were not getting adopted as regular house cats in the shelter. And when we have that issue, what do we do with these non-social cats? In so many shelters, as we know, they may not make it out of the shelter, which is really sad, and why I'm so passionate about working cat programs, which have their place in conjunction with TNR programs, trap, neuter, return programs, to flesh out an adoption program, a regular adoption program, and make every cat have the possibility, within reason, of a live outcome. I'm so grateful that to be with the ASAP cat shelter. We have an approximately 95-96% live release rate. And I know that is just something that not all shelters can attain. We live in a very welcoming community, but I think it is attainable. If we've done it, I think anybody can do it. Getting the community support, getting donor support, developing programs like a working cats and a TNR program. Now, why don't we just TNR all of the cats? Some of the cats, these non-social cats who've lived their lives outside, cannot be returned to their place of origin. They might be a nuisance cat. Maybe that neighborhood is not pro cat. We helped a group of cats in Guadalupe, which is really far to the north of Santa Barbara, where, of course, it broke my heart. There was a lady chasing a cat with a broom and hitting a cat with a broom. Now, that is not necessarily hardcore animal abuse, but when I'm hearing stories like that, because maybe the cat was defecating in her planter box, or for whatever reason, that just tugs at my heart, makes me feel like we got to get those cats out of there. These cats are not welcome. And we wound up taking about 5 cats, and they were trapped by very resourceful Santa Maria trappers, brought to ASAP and targeted as AP cats. At ASAP, we have a behavior team. They usually interface with any cat that is having fear issues, aggression issues. Any cat that is referred to the behavior team is worked with on a daily basis when they first arrive at the shelter to designate them. And this is how the cats are designated to come to the Working Cats program, or it is decided that they are TNR'd. Some of the cats will come in and they can be returned to their place of origin. And that is a TNR, a straight TNR. Some of the cats, we work with them for a week or weeks, and they're not coming around to becoming adoptable. They will get designated as working cats because they were maybe relinquished, as an owner relinquished cat. So what we have is a working cat program that places these non-social cats as mousers with a job on all sorts of different properties. Usually they are farms, nurseries, ranches, some of the larger residential properties. We really have an abundance of ag properties in Santa Barbara County, and it can really run the spectrum. There are some large residential properties, which can be just wonderful outcomes for some of these cats. And so we have an acclimation process, and what happens is the cats are set up in dog crate-like cages. They're in the dog crate-like cages for 2 to 3 weeks as they reset their little internal kitty GPS, as we call it, to their new home. And they have a night shelter. So these cages are set up inside of their night shelter, which could be a garage, shed, or outbuilding. It can be, what else could it be? We placed at a restaurant recently in downtown Santa Barbara. Their night shelter was an outdoor patio that was totally enclosed, super safe from predators and from the public. So they didn't need to have it be totally enclosed. For example, it didn't have a roof, but we set them up in those cages. The staff fell in love with these cats. And it's one of those rare instances where I feel so secure knowing those cats are just safe from predators, safe from what we have a lot of. And frankly, in these open areas in Santa Barbara County, we do have coyotes, bobcats, even raccoons can fight for food with cats, and we need to mitigate that. So how do we make it safe for these cats that I'm placing? And more I'm encouraging, if it's in a garage or a shed, I'm encouraging them to install a cat door. And that is just such gold. I'm finding more and more dedicated adopters are just into it, and they will invest. They'll have a construction worker come out, install a cat door. Many of the cats, most, I would say 99% of the cats I place are microchipped. We'll even install microchip reading cat doors and keep that cat super, super safe. And so the protocol, I educate these adopters with a protocol. We're setting them up in cages with everything they need inside of the cage. We're talking litter box, food, water, bedding, and a cat crate with a bed inside of it, to so that they are self-sufficient. The cats are, except for, of course, food and water, which they are fed twice a day, wet and dry food, litter box scooped once a day, fresh water once a day. We want to give these cats a life of Riley, just spoil them while they're in the cages so they get the picture. They want to stay at this new location. And forging that human-animal bond is so important during this time. And people may think, non-social cats, feral cats, what human-animal bond is possible? Well, believe me, I have seen these cats wind up indoors. They are at the shelter. They're spooked. They're not showing their true nature. They're not showing their true selves. We place them as working cats, and frequently they will just become the beloved pets of the adopters. And that's actually the adopter I'm looking for, is someone who will invest the time and energy, and even the emotional energy, to whatever extent possible, bond with that cat and make that cat part of the family.
Wonderful. I'm going to take a step back here in some of the information you unpacked there. Now, in Switzerland, there is a restaurant that we go to that's right on the edge of the water, and there's a surf shop right next door. And they have a cat that runs around and has a collar and has a little funny thing on. So you talked about a microchip reading cat door. So I'm wondering if maybe that cat has that on its collar. So specifically, what does that do?
Well, having a microchip embedded in the cat, it's a little painless piece of metal that goes, just the science of microchipping. Painless piece of metal is going into the back of their neck while they're at ASAP. And that microchip number is being registered after adoption. And after that cat goes to its new home, being registered to the new owner. So if that cat goes missing in any way, shape, or form, goes out into the community and is brought to any place, a vet clinic, a shelter that has a microchip reader, chip can be read, the registration information is sourced, and that cat can return to home. So that's the basics of microchipping. Probably most everybody knows about microchipping. But having a microchip reading cat door means that we've got a cat door that will not open for any cat except for the cat that has that microchip number. So it's a personalized entrance for the cat that has that microchip. So as a result, the raccoon, not microchip, not going to get in there and get that kitty kibble that it wants. And having that night shelter in a small entry port, like a cat door, is very good for the safety of the cat, because if it's getting chased, heaven forbid, by predator, coyote, bobcat, anything larger, even a large raccoon, it can dash into that night shelter where the door will open for that cat with the microchip, and it will not open, and that coyote will not fit in anyway. So that's how that cat door will really set up for cat safety. Now, of course, these microchip reading cat doors aren't always the easiest things to set up. So I really make sure the owner is either tech savvy or has access to a tech savvy person to program the microchip door. Now, the cat you saw may have had a reader on its collar or a tag on its collar that would trigger a door. It also may have had an air tag, which would, under Wi-Fi circumstances, be able to track the cat. But anyway, so that's all about microchip doors, and we love them for our working cats.
And it is funny. My son lives in New York City in the Lower East Side, and he was out walking around and he saw a cat with an air tag on. And so I thought, wow.
Yeah, that can be done. I don't know all about those air tags and their sphere of influence, like their range, but they can be really helpful. I've seen people, I'm also a pet sitter. I run a pet sitting business here in Santa Barbara. And I've seen people out on properties with their phones, clearly looking for their pet. So it can come in handy.
For sure. Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today. Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable healthcare for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full-mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trickum on Highway 92 at Trickum Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if your whole TNR team was on the same page? Imagine your staff and volunteers mastering trapping best practices, prepping cats properly for clinic arrival, and making everyone's job easier. Would you like to give them a toolbox of tips and tricks to refer to whenever trapping gets tough? Our monthly virtual TNR workshops are perfect for group training, covering everything from TNR philosophy to planning, equipment use, public relations, because we are all going to run into those stubborn neighbors, and cat care tips, plus more. With Q&A sessions, handouts, customized content for your program, your team will be ready to successfully reduce the number of free-roaming cats in your community. Ready to turn your trappers into a team? Great! Email Stacy at communitycatspodcast.com or call 978-239-2090 for details.
If you want to catalog all your cat sightings to manage your colonies easier, then Whisker Tracker is for you. It's a free mobile app that lets you create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today.
So I've been involved with barn cat relocation or barn cat adoption programs is another way of thinking about it. We used to have in 1998, I think we placed like 120 barn cats in 1 year. Back in the day when we were overwhelmed and overstressed, and we actually did a relocation out to a sheep farm out in Western Massachusetts, and we brought a wire caging around and just set up this outdoor acclimation pen for about 20 or 25 cats. That's probably one of the largest relocations. We also went for such a period of time with the program that many of the cats would age out. We would get phone calls about 8 years later that they wanted to be restocked, so to speak. Many of these cats had very long lives. We also, we've heard you can't mix the cats. Now, trying to have cats that have a bond with each other beforehand. However, if we had a cageless environment at our shelter, and so there were like four cats that we had that had really no connection upon entry, but they bonded and they spent the same time together in the cage. And so we just relocated them as a group to a horse training facility, which they had their own stall retrofitted for them. And they were very successful. So, and one of those cats came from an indoor only hoarding situation with 80 other cats that had, so it was a cat that had never been outside ever and was relocated. So we did it. So that cat wasn't going to have to leave the family that it had grown to love and develop in our adoption center. And those cats all stayed for over 10 years in that barn. And it was a very successful story and option. And I know you have a lot of stories about barn relocation, but we get a lot of people saying, well, they don't stay around. They don't stay. And what makes those cats stay and how successful are you with that program?
Well, for one thing, I do have some data, recent data that I've just called off of my experiences looking at 2022 and 2023 adoptions, working cat placements, whatever you want to call them. I sent out a survey to all those adopters and did find that with 31% of the people responding, which actually is a pretty good for survey results, then that was just my first wave sending it out. I have 61% retention, where that is, so that is going to be 6 months to 2 years retention of the cats to the property. And I feel that's pretty, I really feel that's pretty good. And just to get the survey back also was very useful, because they rated us very highly in terms of our customer service and client service. We got all 4 out of 5s on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being very available for follow-up, 1 being not so available or helpful. So that gave me a good boost in terms of we're going in the right direction with this program. And also I get all the anecdotal, the stories. And the most heartfelt thing for me, at a shelter where we don't euthanize for sake of space, where do I get my really meat and potato satisfaction out of placement? When we have a behavior problem cat, where this cat has been a problem in the home, it was brought to us owner relinquished, or it developed, it came in as a stray, and usually there are no other cats. They're so unhappy at the shelter. We call them NOC cats, or no other cats. And they need to be placed solo as working cats. And we can do that. It's a little labor intensive, because we have to take one of our placements and dedicate it instead of to 2 to 4 cats. It's just going to 1 cat, and we have to have a special adopter who has a lot of compassion, can read cat behavior, body language, and be safe. And we have a lot of counseling in that regard as well to keep them safe. And I'm talking about cats who have been a bit of a liability to volunteers in terms of perhaps biting volunteers, having a bite history. And then we had 1 cat, Sage, who just went out to one of our great placements in this area, in the Carpinteria area, our cannabis farms. And whatever you feel about cannabis, they are great places to relocate cats. And we had this wonderful young man who runs one of the cannabis farms out there take this cat and give her a great home. And I know she's still there. It's been 6 to 8 months. I know she's still there because he called me up. He said she got a little bite wound on her leg and I want to take her to the vet. And he was just so, you know, he sent us pictures. And again, it's such a win, not only for the cat, but the people are so enriched at these places of work where the working cats go. They form that human-animal bond. It's stress relieving. It's like bring your cat to work day every day for them. And it's just really, really amazing, because the reality is if we don't find a place for these cats, what are their options? Working cat programs historically have been programs of last resort. And I like to think of, and my executive director at ASAP also has encouraged me to think of the working cats program as really going beyond that program of last resort, where I'm taking cats that just aren't getting the traction with a regular adoption at the shelter, and they're dwelling longer than we feel comfortable with. They're unhappy. They're usually not happy around other cats. And I did one of my first placements to a gentleman who had lost his longtime indoor-outdoor cat. He was heartbroken. It was that cat was his buddy. And so we have Layla, who was languishing at the shelter. He came in and was just looking around, just healing himself and getting his cat fix or whatever he needed. And he just saw Layla, beautiful long hair, domestic long hair, orange and white, just an adorable, beautiful cat, little spicy. You have to be able to read that body language. You have to know when her time is up in terms of petting her affection. And he was just the perfect guy to give her that kind of space and understand her. And he took her home. It was a little dicey, no other cat's cat. Yet he had an 18-year-old cat in his home, a resident cat. And then I went ahead and counseled, not only because I'm a lead on the shift and do regular cat adoptions as well. I can counsel for just regular in-home adoptions. So I gave him that kind of counseling and also the introduction to the outdoors kind of counseling. And it all stuck. So he came back. He wanted to do his adoption. Since we do foster to adopt, he went foster to adopt at first, came back to adopter and wanted to come in person because he wanted to tell the stories about Layla. And so I was lucky enough to hear all those stories and process the adoption. And so it'll probably turn into a nice social media posting that he authorized. He doesn't want to have his photo posted, but the cat, of course. And so Layla is definitely another happy tale story.
So you mentioned fostering. When you do adopt the barn cats out, are they fostered while they're in their holding period and then you close the adoption? No.
Not at all. That's a very good question. They are always outcomed. It's an interesting situation we have at ASAP. They are outcome to the adopter. We release them through our shelter software, ShelterLove, which is very useful in all of this process. It is fairly new to ASAP and has really expanded our capability to just give even better attention to cats, track their behavior progress, all their progress. Anyway, in that shelter software system, we release them as wildlife. So that's technically what we do, but we do put a memo in each cat's file noting the adopter who is taking that cat. And so that if they ever come into a shelter, the microchip can be tracked back to us, to the adopter, and they can be returned to home.
I'm part of an organization or part of a TNR group. Maybe I don't even do adoptions, but you know, I have these cats that could be candidates. What would you suggest I do if I wanted to try and start a program like this?
Well, I would suggest you first contact me or someone else who is working a working cat program. I can send you the presentation I've put together and I gave in January, in fact, at the online cat conference that the Community Cat Podcast put on, which was absolutely wonderful. And that would be a starting point. That's how to, you know, create or how to run a successful working cats program. And it gives you not only it gives you the slides and a lot of pictures as to how we set them up. I'm really finding that the equipment needed, and you can even require your adopters to get the equipment needed is really not that extensive or expensive. You just need some dog crate-like cages and then supplies, which can really be found in any kind of normal shelter supply storage shed, probably old towels for bedding, water bowls, food to start out, cat carrier, litter box, litter. We deck them out with everything they need for the first like few days. We give them the food they need to start with, litter supply, pooper scooper, poop bags. We just make it really easy for them. So those first few days, they will have no stress and just be able to bond with the cat. So anyway, a TNR program is a great place to start because you have, and especially if you don't have a brick and mortar shelter, because you need to get these cats out of foster, wherever they are, into people's homes as soon as possible. You can set up a simple Google Form application for people to fill out online and then screen adopters through a simple phone call. I like to do site visits where I go and meet with the people in person, check out their property and do a little troubleshooting ahead of time. Like, what is the night shelter going to be? What is going to be the easiest way to get the cats in at night? Another part of the protocol, simply providing a bell to the adopters. They can ring the bell at the time of feeding, starting from the get-go, when the cats are placed, call the cat's name. That is associated with feeding time. And then the cats are ideally, after release, brought in at night and shut in at night into their night shelter so they're safe from dawn to dusk. Dusk to dawn, rather.
Dusk to dawn. This is sort of a philosophical question that I've run into with a couple of organizations. And my question is, you have an adoption program in adopting cats out into homes. Maybe they're indoor only. Maybe they're indoor, outdoor. And then there's the barn relocation and your trap, neuter, return program. Some of these adoption programs, though, are indoor only adoptions. They do indoor only and they can do barn relocation, but they don't do indoor outdoor. And I feel that it's a little uncomfortable. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I'm not sure if you've handled that philosophical question at all.
Well, at ASAP, my background is coming from a more tightly reined adoption format where it was strongly encouraged for the cats to be indoor only after adoption. We're talking our domestic regular house cat adoption program. And we have since adopted the HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, conversational adoption format, which is much more open, conversational, and we don't put those restrictions on the adoptions. And so for that reason, I feel at least at ASAP, we're seeing that it works really well to have that open kind of adoption format where you're counseling people if they do want to have indoor, outdoor, know that your cat is microchipped, know that you need to train the cat to come in at night, which I have found from my own personal experience and seeing with this working cat program is not that hard. Every cat is going to be different. Every person's going to be different in terms of what they're willing to do. But I can see when cats are food motivated, and most of them are, they like to eat. If you plan bringing the cat in around mealtime and getting food, that is where it really works. So that's a really good question, Stacey. I really appreciate that. I would encourage people who are having restrictions on their adoptions to at least consider opening it up a little more. Look at your length of stay numbers. Look at any, you know, your life outcomes, and see whether opening it up to indoor, outdoor could perhaps increase your rates of adoption.
Barry, if folks are interested in finding out more about ASAP, how would they do that?
Well, you can go to our website, asapcats.org. That's ASAPCATS.org. And that's the ASAP website. You'll find under services, the Working Cats program. Our Working Cats application can be sourced there if you want to fill out a kind of a test application and not submit it to see what our application is like. That would be absolutely fine. You can contact me at workingcats@asapcats.org. That's workingcats@asapcats.org. Both are plural, workingcats and asapcats.org. You can even reach me by phone at 805-637-7964. That's a cell phone, so you can call or text. If you need any help, any direction, I'm super happy to boost people along their way toward having a Working Cats program. I find it very satisfying. Get out to see a lot of the country that a lot of the county that I normally wouldn't see, and meet a lot of great people and save a lot of cats.
And is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I would like to talk about, beyond encouraging people to give it a shot with the Working Cats program, getting the help you need to get started, also to encourage people, all of us in animal rescue, we work so hard. There's so many ups and downs. Animal sheltering is really hard sometimes. And it's just so important. Self-care, I have found, is just so important. And I'm sure we all find in our own way what we need for ourselves to keep us going, keep us taken care of, and keep our hearts strong, keep ourselves strong. And I would encourage everyone to really choose that along with choosing to help cats. Put yourself first when you need to, which is most of the time, and enjoy what you're doing. Get that satisfaction, focusing on the positive outcomes and focusing on what you're putting into it. It's easy to get focused on the numbers or, oh, this happened or that happened as an outcome. And then just weighing back on, what am I putting into it? And that is can just be very rewarding and very centering. So yeah, I think that's about it.
Excellent. Mary, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope we'll have you on the show in the future.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much, Stacey.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.